you can. Put it on the board.
All right, guys, what's going on? It is another episode of the Midwest Swing Podcast and also simulcast on Periscope. Hopefully it's working like it's supposed to. We'll send out a couple of blasts here to let people know and that they should send their questions on Twitter so that I can see them a little bit more easily. All right, Twins getting ready to play the last game of the Detroit Tigers series here in about, a little over an hour, if you're listening to this live anyway. The Twins looking to stave off a sweep from the Detroit Tigers yesterday. Kyle Gibson got into a little bit of trouble, gave up a grand slam to Andrew Roman. I get those two mixed up here. Romine Brothers, the other one, catching prospect in the Yankees system. And so anyway, hopefully the Twins can get back on the positive side of things before coming home. Got, I believe, Chicago over the weekend, and then the big series coming up is going to be Cleveland coming to town next week. Cleveland, obviously, the odds-on favorite to win the division after what they did last year, and it's going to be, you know, a fun series. Hopefully, the Twins have something that resembles progress against Cleveland here in that first series. I'm going to look on ESPN here while I got a chance to see if any of the pitching matchups have been firmed up. I know that this weekend, which is Easter weekend, there is going to be Quintana Santana again on Saturday, which is going to be, you know, another good pitching matchup. We saw that one on the south side here last week, and so we'll see what happens here. With the series that opens up on Monday, here's what ESPN has for matchups. Danny Salazar against Kyle Gibson to start the series. Tuesday, Josh Tomlin against Phil Hughes. Phil Hughes going for the Twins today in Detroit. And then we've got Trevor Bauer and Adalberto Mejia in Wednesday's game. So that is an ESPN game. Get some national perspective for your Twins, which is going to be kind of nice. Hopefully they can keep playing well to that point. Again, yesterday kind of a disappointing game as the Twins fall to 5-3. And just didn't look all that impressive. If you're watching on the live stream right now, keep in mind that I want you to send your questions to Twitter. That way I can see them longer than they would be on the Periscope chat interface. They come and go and come and go and come and go, and you can't see them. It makes it difficult for me to answer them in a timely fashion and to remember everything that's been said. But without further ado, let's go into some of the questions. I did get a number of questions from Eric Pleiss. He's on Twitter at erolfpleiss. I will answer some of them. I can't answer all of them just because we only have a half hour here. But he did ask, the first question was, why are there still so many pitchers? And I think that's a valid question based on short bench and the fact that guys like Michael Tonkin and Craig Breslow are not being used all that much so far this season. I really do think I think a fairly good probability is that when A-Ray Adrianza is ready to come back from the disabled list, they'll send a pitcher out. Now, that's not going to be popular because that means Danny Santana staves off, you know, elimination from the roster for another day. And again, they could go in another direction. They could designate Danny and then bring up Kenny Vargas, who's off to a good start, down at AAA Rochester as well. I just think that it's going to be probably Adrianza coming up and a pitcher going down. I don't know if that'll be Tyler Duffy, who has options, but has pitched very well. 6 shutout innings and like a 56.6% ground ball rate so far. It would be disappointing to see him get sent down, but I do think options are going to play a factor as well. They seem to always do that, whether it's Terry Ryan at the helm or Derek Falvey and Thad Levine. And I still don't think they're ready to give up on Michael Tonkin, who's been so far this season. They're not going to give up on the Craig Breslow experiment quite yet. Obviously looked a little better in his second appearance of the season last year as opposed to how he looked that first time around. If you see me giving looks over here, There is a snoring cat on my desk. It's not Oscar here, who is behind me and is minding his own business looking in the other direction. But Buster is down here snoring. You might see him get up here in a minute. Hopefully he doesn't make any noise. Anyway, on to the next question from Mr. Pleiss. Pretend you're Molitor and or Falvey. Why is Danny Santana still on this team? Honestly, I think Danny Santana, I think the more troubling question is why he's playing so much. But I do wonder if Paul Molitor does kind of have an affinity for him. And it might be, you know, Gardy had his guys, his Matt Tolberts, his Nick Puntos. And it does feel like Danny Santana is that kind of guy with Paul Molitor. You know, we all saw what Danny Santana did in the first year of his career, but just since then has not done anything. So, I don't know. I think he's on his last leg, and I don't think it makes any difference to Thad Levine and Derek Falvey if Paul Molitor likes him. If he doesn't perform, you're probably going to send him down. Now, I don't have his offensive numbers in front of me. I can pull them up here quick. Danny Santana hitting 1-for-10, so obviously that's not going to get it done. Defensively, I think he's been okay, and the fact that he can play infield and outfield helps. And that's why I think if they were to go get Eirei Adrianza, you still can't cut Danny Santana because then you don't have a backup outfielder. Now, you do have Robbie Grossman who's DHing quite regularly, but you know, you can't move him from DH to the outfield without losing the DH. So there are some layers there that will have to be unpacked as they deal with the pitching staff and how they get back down to 12 pitchers, because I do think that's going to be a very short-term fix. The next question we had is, pretend you're Brian Dozier. How much do you love your own hair? Well, I actually love my own hair as well. But Brian Dozier, yeah, I mean, I like that that gif of him where he makes the diving catch and then flips his hair back up. And I think that should have maybe spawned some Head and Shoulders sponsorships like Joe Mauer used to have. But nothing yet. I think Brian Dozier's stubble game is actually better than his hair, frankly. And so I think the facial hair is better than the hair up top for him. Obviously not the case for me. My wife says my beard's kind of patchy and white trashy, and she's definitely right there. But it's also her job to help me keep it manicured, so it kind of cuts both ways there, huh, babe? again, if you're on the Periscope feed, make sure to send your questions to Twitter. I do see a couple trickling in. I'm going to roll through some of these here as they come in. Eric also asks, Jose Berríos had a solid first start in Rochester. Is it too early to start clamoring for his call-up? No, I don't think so, and he's also slated to pitch today, so he's no longer lined up with Adalberto Mejia, which is probably the rotation spot he should be eyeing at this point. But I do think if Mejia struggles for maybe 2-3 more starts, you could see one of those deals where they just flip-flop him, because I don't know that Mejia's really got an ironclad spot in the rotation to the point where he can feel safe after 2 or 3 rough starts. So hopefully either he gets things going or they get Berríos up here pretty quickly. So keep an eye on Berríos' pitch count today, because I think also pitch count is going to play a factor in, you know, how quickly they get him up and you know, spinning his wheels in the big league rotation. You don't really want him firing bullets down at AAA if he's, you know, basically big league ready. Another question. Something named Ben Paulson is crushing it in Rochester. Who the heck? I understand that question is probably in jest. Ben Paulson has big league experience with the Colorado Rockies, has hit fairly well, but again, most people do in Colorado. You got a bat with some big league experience down at Rochester. That never hurts. You know, it's kind of a backup plan for first base, maybe corner outfield if, you know, the situation goes sideways with Robbie Grossman or someone else, or they just need an extra bat. Non-40-man roster guy, though, so he would have to make some room, which is already kind of an issue with this 40-man roster. But, yeah, if Paulson keeps swinging it well, they could go get him as a bat. I just think he's probably behind Kenny Vargas, probably behind Byung-ho Park at this point. Park on the disabled list, right hamstring strain. I was told by someone who I trust that it won't be a big deal and that he should be back pretty quickly. They even thought that maybe a disabled list stint could have been avoided when they first talked to Park. So it sounds like it's not too terribly worrisome, and you know, hopefully he can be moving again pretty quickly. Next question: what would a meow at the park event be like? Well, I think for me, you know, that's kind of my life, but I also think we saw it in Miami here the other night with that cat that climbed up the home run statue, home run monument, I guess, in center field at Marlins Park. Boy, that cat, I don't know if people saw the cat after the fact, but not only did it look winded, it was, it looked pretty freaked out. So I hope that, I hope they took good care of that cat. I'm, you know, obviously you can tell I'm a cat fiend or freak or just a big cat fan. I hope they took good care of that cat and it got out in one piece. I thought in honor of Jose Fernandez, they should call it Jose Fernandez, but apparently it's a little too soon for that. But I hope they took good care of it. Why doesn't Eduardo Escobar get more playing time? Simply put, that's three positions he can handle. They've got guys they really like, whether it's Dozier, Jorge Polanco. Polanco, interestingly enough, a guy that I work with at Rotographs posted, he's one of, I think it was five players as of yesterday who had not swung and missed yet at a pitch in the strike zone this season. You know, a guy that doesn't strike out much, but takes good swings and, you know, gives a good effort at the plate, rewards, you know, the patience with him, and he's got good patience at the plate. He's just a really good hitter, and I think that it's showing so far this year. What are the reasonable expectations for Eddie Rosario this year besides having really good facial hair? Honestly, with Rosario, I think you hope for a 750, 760 OPS because you really got to slug if you're not going to have on-base skills to get to that point. And I don't know. If he can get back to playing really good defense and left and spelling... Something's going on outside. If he can get back to playing really good defense and left and spelling Byron Buxton in center every now and then and, you know, pop 15 home runs, maybe 10, 12 doubles, I think that would be pretty good. But it's very important for him to have a season where he shows offensive progress. You can't have a third straight season that's basically identical to the first two. He's not good enough to go stagnant offensively and still have to be considered a fixture on this team. And you know, there are going to be some corner outfielders that are interesting in at a couple different levels, you know, as far as as far as how well they play. You know, Bryce Harper, I'm sure, isn't going to happen, but he's a free agent in a couple years, and the Twins will have a lot of money off the books. If they want to shoot for the moon, there's going to be guys. If they want to go middle tier, there's going to be guys, and they have to find out if they think that Eddie Rosario or Daniel Palka or Zach Granite, they have to decide who they think is part of the future in the outfield. Frankly, I do think Eddie Rosario should be playing right, and Max Kepler should be playing left. But I don't know how much that matters. I just think Rosario's arm is better and, you know, maybe not as accurate, but definitely stronger. So I don't know how much that really matters. Is it possible 50 Cent is underrated? No, I don't think so. He did follow that up with just a little bit. No, I don't think so. What are the coolest shoes that I've ever owned? I did have a pair of Lacoste sneaks, I guess, that were pretty cool, but they were too big because I was an idiot and ordered a pair of 13s when I'm only a size 12, so I ended up throwing them away. But they're pretty cool. They had the alligator on them. Otherwise, I had a pair of gold Adidas when I was in high school that were pretty cool, too. I'm not a big shoe guy, although, I don't know, I kind of like the Yeezys, and I don't know, I might start buying some better shoes. I've been wearing Sanuks a lot. They are just kind of like slip-on, real comfortable, kind of nice looking, kind of unassuming. I just wear a pair of black ones that kind of blend with everything I wear because I wear black pretty much every day. But no, I'm not a huge shoe guy. How has it been having a full-time credential so far? It's great. Technically it's my fourth season of having one. 2014 I didn't have one, but 2013 and then the last 3 years. I've really enjoyed it. Covered two games so far on this upcoming 10-game homestand. I think I'm going to six games. If people are at the games and want to say, hey, please feel free to tweet me and I'll see what I have time for. I do like coming out and saying hi to people, and you know, it's just part of the deal to you know, mingle a little bit, and people seem to be really nice, and it is Minnesota after all, so it is kind of fun, and it's fun to get to know people that I know virtually in terms of in real life. Do you think that all the Garden Hire children should put on fake gray goatees for the next picture on their holiday card? Obviously. Duh. these Twins are going to have a fun clubhouse again like they did in 2015. I already feel like they do. It is actually a really fun clubhouse right now. Again, it's only been 2 days that I've been in the clubhouse, but I already get a much better vibe from this team than I have from any non-2015 team. I don't know how much the smoke machine and the dance parties matter, but it's cool. I don't know. Are you going to try and get your kid to call you Big Papa? I don't think so. Nah, I don't think that's going to be the way to go. Ben wants to know, it's only been two starts, but are you worried about Gibson? I wouldn't say I'm worried about Kyle Gibson, because there's still some evidence that there's a fairly good pitcher in there somewhere. The blow-ups are concerning. He's not young either. He's going to be, I think, 30 in October. And it's starting to be, put up or shut up time. I don't mean that maliciously. Kyle Gibson's a great dude and a very good pitcher. But, you see the ground ball stuff, you see him mix in the strikeouts, and it's just a little bit concerning that, once every five or six innings he has that blow up. And, I mean, Andrew Romine taking you deep, that's a pretty big ding to the psyche. But, I don't know, I thought he looked pretty good. That inning notwithstanding, the trouble is that, if you make a living out of blow-up innings, which is something some guys have done, Phil Hughes and Michael Pineda are kind of the guys that we've seen more recently do that kind of thing. It doesn't really fly, though, if you're a ground ball guy with so-so command and not a ton of strikeouts, Corey Kluber had, I think it was not last year, but the year before, where he was a little more prone to blow-ups, but he could still sustain like a 3.20, 3.30 ERA. Well, Gibson's not that kind of guy. Gibson's best season 2 years ago was like a 3.75 ERA or something like that. For Corey Kluber to post something like that would be a huge blow-up for him. When you're already not pitching particularly well, you don't really have the luxury of having those blow-up innings. So he's got to find a way to put it together. It always feels like he just loses sight of execution in the bad inning, and I don't know what can help him get over that hump. But I do still think there's a good pitcher in there, and I think it's shown. Hypothetically, if he's thrown 10 innings this year, I suspect eight of those 10 innings have been good, and then the other two have been really iffy. So I don't know how you reconcile that. I don't know how you improve from there, but I believe between, all the guys on the staff and the fact that Gibson, is a good pitcher deep down, I think that some way or another there's a way to figure it out, and hopefully it happens here, because the other worrisome thing is if he goes elsewhere, if he gets traded, if he eventually hits free agency, but I guess by the time he hits free agency, he'll be 32, 33, so it won't be that big of a deal. But if you give up on Gibson and he becomes something somewhere else, it does call into question why you weren't able to figure it out here. And again, first round pedigree and all that, you got to figure it out. So I think I think it can still happen. I think Jason Castro is the catcher to put all that together, and I do think there's still a feeling out process for him with each pitcher, with the exception of Phil Hughes, who I believe is mostly going to work with Chris Jimenez. Which is also interesting. So I do think Gibson will get better as the season goes on. I'm not going to worry too much about two starts for anybody, with the exception of maybe Mejia, who's young and also has a chance to be replaced by Berríos. So keep an eye on Berríos again today, starting for Triple A Rochester, because as long as he's lengthened out, I don't have in front of me how many pitches he threw last time out, but I doubt it was too many more than 80. If he gets up to 100 pitches and looks good, he might not be that far away. Which of your cats do you like better? Matt Liefeld wants to know. I don't really have a preference. They each do different things. Buster's the one that will let me pick him up and hold him whenever. And he's extremely friendly. And then Oscar here is kind of like a loyal friend. He doesn't really want to be held, but he'll follow me everywhere I go. And he's really smart. I tell him to stop doing something and he gets mad, he'll kind of meow at me and then jump down or whatever. The one thing he does a lot is, you can see the countertop back here, he jumps up there all the time and I have to get after him about getting down from there. So He's a good cat. Chews on a lot of stuff, though, which is why he vomits all the time, which is kind of annoying. Where would you bet Buxton in the lineup after his day off yesterday? Hope it helped see him get going. That's from Nick Moen. Hi, Nick. I saw Nick say hi on the Periscope chat. Nick's one of my most enthusiastic supporters, which I appreciate a lot. I think batting Buxton ninth is a great move because, you know, I do like speed in the nine spot if you're going to get someone on in front of Dozier. Again, I don't think Buxton really profiles ever being a leadoff hitter, and I think a lot of people want him to be that, but, you know, at the ninth spot, you take some of the pressure off, whether that pressure is superficial, you know, or real, or if it's one of those deals where it's just a perception thing. And you just got to get him swinging right. And if it was me, you start him 100 straight games in center field, you bat him ninth, and see where he stands after that. Other than that, you know, I don't think you're going to send him back and burn up another option, and I just don't think that there's just not much to be gained from him going down to AAA one way or the other. So, you know, I definitely just let him keep playing and let him fight through this. You know, if after 100 games he's still hitting 180, you know, that's troublesome. You'd hope he'd be hitting 220, 230 at least, and, you know, even just running into a ball every now and then, maybe not you know, maybe not as often as you might like, but often enough to justify his presence in addition to his defense and speed. Matt Liefeld wants to know, that pitch to Romine wasn't that bad, was it? Looks like he just went and got it. You know, my initial reaction was that it was a pretty good pitch, but, you know, down and into a lefty is kind of a happy place as well. You know, I think the pitch was reasonably well executed. Down and in, I think it was a slider, like 83 miles per hour. I don't know. I mean, the thing about Romine is he's not a particularly special hitter. He's actually a light-hitting utility infielder. But if a big league hitter is expecting a certain pitch in a certain place in a certain count, they'll jump all over it, and that's exactly what Romine did. By the way, I thought that bat flip was sweet. I mean, I have no hate for that bat flip, which, you know, if you hit the crap out of the ball like that, I don't care. If you are, who was the guy in the 87 World Series? Tom Lawless, I think it was, who did that crazy bat flip, and he hit like his second home run of his lifetime or second home run of his season in the World Series, marched like three steps and then just flipped the bat. You know what? If you hit the crap out of the ball, flip your bat. I don't care. Romine's bat flip was sweet. I don't even care. I'm not even going to pretend that it wasn't. It was funny. I saw on Yahoo, got drug tested for the first time this season after the game, which, you know, it's funny how how serendipitous that is. I've seen a couple Twins players get tested, and it's always funny to see who gets tested when and what their face looks like when they walk out with the testing company. And, you know, you know what's going on, even as someone like me who's not in there every day on the road. But, you know, it's pretty funny. Well, that's about all I have for today. Let's do this. Let's pause. The Twins are going to start up here in about an hour, but we'll plan to meet back here tomorrow. Break down, let's see. What time do the Twins play tomorrow? Because I think I'm covering the game. I should probably look that up. These are the things you should probably know if you're covering a baseball team, which I am not good at. Okay, so we got Dylan Covey and Adalberto Mejia. I feel like saying that like Alberto Del Rio. I don't know why. It's a 7:10 game, so yeah, you'll probably see me here tomorrow morning. Check us out, Midwest Swing, Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Again, you guys did a great job today of sending the comments to Twitter, and a lot of comments, especially thankful for Eric Pleiss today, who basically gave me 25 minutes worth of fodder, some good, some bad. I blame myself, not you, but fun show today, and you know what? We'll find a way to make these daily shows work, whether it's with the help of you guys sending me questions as we're live, or I can collect them in the emails and Facebook and all that. We'll find a way to make it work, and we'll have some fun with it. Anyway, so that's a wrap for Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.